a song when something special comes along. It's a long-winded directionless discussion for conversationalists.
You bring the wit.
You bring the brains and we'll talk it over between takes.
Welcome back to Between Takes with Opal Entertainment. I'm Maiden Driscoll.
And I'm Livia O'Neill.
And today we're grabbing some books off the old shelf, sampling some excerpts of them, and figuring out if we want to read them.
And in the second half of the episode, we're going to talk a little bit about what inspires us and motivates us and keeps us excited to work.
It's a real classic, hoot and a half, all new episode of...
Between Takes!
Hey, how are you doing, Livia?
I'm good, I have a little cold.
I'm sorry. How little is
it's
it?
It's okay. It's getting better. It's getting smaller.
Yes. I guess. Yeah. Smaller cold. Less percentage of you is a cold now these days or something. Welcome back to the show, folks. We got a great one planned for you today. We have, it's a nice, it feels like the last few days have felt like actually fall, you know? It hasn't gotten above like lower 60s. And there's a nice breeze. Yeah. It's been a little bit overcast.
Kind of like...
Leaves are starting
rainy.
To change. Yeah. It's a little bit drizzly. Good times. I'm enjoying it.
It's very cozy.
Yeah, I like it. I got this apple cider candle, which people probably can't see.
It says apple harvest on it.
Well, I was kind of close. And then I made some apple cider yesterday.
Yeah. Second batch of the season.
Yeah, it wasn't as good as the first batch.
And the difference, you use like Honeycrisp or something?
I used like Honeycrisp the first time and then Granny Smith.
Which is like a green apple, yeah. Mm-hmm. I liked the first probably better.
I did too. I think the second one also, the first one, they like the apples themselves, when you boiled them, they stayed intact better. So it was a lot easier to drain them to like pick them out.
Sure.
But this next one, they like fell apart. So there's a lot of like apple granulates floating around in the cider, which is, doesn't change the flavor that much. It's just like you think of cider and it's like this nice crisp, you know,
doesn't have chunks in it. Yeah.
Doesn't have chunks in it. Right. So yeah, that's that.
But it smelled so
good. It smells really good. Liv, do you have a favorite autumn scent? Autumn fragrance, if you will. Sadia 54.
I mean, I do love pumpkin spice. Typical.
Typical white girl.
I know. But it's so good. Maybe just like cloves and cinnamon.
Yeah.
Pumpkin. I also, vanilla, I feel like that can kind of go any time of year, but like a warm vanilla candle, so good.
Soy candle est su candle.
Is that gracias. The thing is? I don't know.
Mi casa es soy casa? Mi candle es soy candle? Or something, I don't know. So,
cool.
Do you have any stories you want to share with the folks?
With the forks?
You have any forks you want to share with the people at home? Do you have anything you would like to share with everyone before we jump into the big reveal?
No.
All right. I'm pregnant. I'm not. Do you want to share it or should I?
So, yeah. Today, we have this bookshelf. It's right off camera, eight inside.
Some of it.
Most of them, I guess, are books for me that I've just grow up reading or whatever for school, things like that. So...
And you remember all of it? You were pretty encyclopedic?
Definitely
memory.
Not.
Oh.
I think when I was like 14 or something, I studied the early church history. And there's like several books and it's kind of about similar things. So yeah. Anyways, we grabbed some books that we thought would be, grab this one, grab this one, grab a fiction book, grab a history of the church book.
Because there's many books on the shelf that I've looked at that have just been sitting in the corner of the studio. And I've been like, I should read that at some point. But I don't know, like, should I start
What's
with that
about?
One?
What's it about? Is it good? Or, there's too many. For like, me, it's like, I don't remember the specifics of what
So she's
even
no help
happened.
When it comes to, like, which one should I start with? She's
Yeah.
Like,
so we're going to read excerpts from the book randomly and then decide yay or nay type of thing.
And then maybe I'll create a little reading list.
If we read anything that's like, that's a thinker, like, let's talk about that, then we can also do that organically, talk about the books. So, Ada, do you want to start?
Sure. So, these are books we kind of picked for each other. Well, mostly, I picked some for myself, and then Liv gave me a couple. She gave me one? I think she just gave me one.
I guess so.
It's Emma by Jane Austen.
I have not read this book, and I just found it at this... really large bookstore. It's like a secondhand bookstore type thing in Nashville. And so I just found it.
Oh, so you haven't even read it?
No.
Oh, so you're not necessarily recommending it, like I should read it?
No, that's why you're reading it to me, and I want to see if I should read it.
Should I just read the back? Because there's a quote right there.
I guess.
All right.
But it's more, well, yeah, I guess you could.
I feel like it's
more fun to find a part.
All right, beginning of chapter 14. Some change of countenance was necessary for each gentleman as they walked into Mrs. Weston's drawing room. Getting saucy already. Mr. Elton must compose his joyous looks, and Mr. John Knightley disperse his ill humor. Mr. Elton must smile less, and Mr. John Knightley more, to fit them for the place. Emma only might be as nature prompted, and shew herself just as happy as she was. Should I keep going? What are you thinking?
I really like in your... your reading stance.
This is how it's done. This is how I learned it from my father. I just watched it because he read a ton to us. Mm-hmm. And he almost always had a pipe or a cup of tea or something in his other hand. Or was, I don't know, doodling. He had a lot of things going on. He always decided to start the big projects. Well, yeah, anyway. Remember that. So he would always read it with one hand.
It's cool. I like it.
That's all.
Great. So I take it there's two gentlemen and... one is like a bit more of this frowning.
It's Mr. John Knightley.
One's too happy, and they need to level themselves out because Emma's perfect.
I think that's kind of the impression I'm getting. Not necessarily perfect, but whole
she's like fitting the.
Emma only might be as nature prompted and shew herself just as happy as she was. To her, it was real enjoyment to be with the Westons. Okay, so I wonder what the relation is between Mr. Elton, Mr. Knightley, and the Westons. Because it sounds like they're at Mr. West. The
Westons. With these books, there's always so many names.
There's so many names. That's why I've never gotten into
them. I don't know who you are.
I think it's Wuthering Heights. Is that Jane?
I don't know.
Jane Austen. I was right. I think it's Wuthering Heights. Both my mom and Tia, my sister-in-law, I remember one time we got together and they both, it might have only been like 5 minutes, but it felt like 20 minutes. They were just like, I hate that book. It's so boring and slow. Anyway. To all our Wuthering Heights stands out there, sorry, it's just an opinion, and it's not even an opinion I have.
Yeah, I've never read the book.
Yes, same.
With those types of books, I feel like you are, well, I would read it for the aesthetic of, like, that time.
And the vibe?
Yes. Mm. The aesthetic. It's like the people and the way of life and running a house and having suitors and all
But it's not necessarily, like, the characters.
Depending. No. It can be about the characters.
Quick question.
Yeah.
Jane Austen didn't write Jane Eyre, right?
No.
But that takes place in, like, a similar era as a lot of Jane Austen's books.
Yeah.
Because Marge has told me to read Jane Eyre.
Actually, I'm not sure, because maybe it's the same era. I don't know.
Look at us.
I picture it that way, but I'm not actually sure what it was written for.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like big houses and like, yeah.
She is in fact a beautiful girl and must be thought so by 99 people out of 100. Until it appears that men are much more philosophic on the subject of beauty than they are generally supposed, till they do fall in love with well-informed minds instead of handsome faces, a girl with such loveliness as Harriet. Ooh. Has a certainty of being admired and sought after, of having the power of choosing from among many.
Okay.
All right. Well.
So it's kind of about a girl who, like, is vain.
I think maybe.
And then comes to find out that it's about the mind and the things that's what guys fall in love with more than the beauty.
Yeah, maybe.
Or at least the good ones. Okay, great.
Are you going to read it?
Yeah. It's really big. Also, I love that green.
It's a very nice shade of green.
It's a cool cover. It looks like a good fall.
Is that Emma?
I believe so. Huh. Or is it Harriet? We've got Harriet was mentioned. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. I feel like it's a good fall.
It's interesting.
Look.
The garb makes her look like a bit of like a, like you were saying, like a vein, but the face is so like innocent and seemed like
I wonder if it's just
so
the,
sure.
You just wore that. That was just the thing you wear.
We're also like having little to no context for any of this.
We have pretty much none. Some people that probably read Emma are just like, you are so off.
I think it's a story about
going through the jungle or something.
Most I know about Emma is a few years ago, there was a movie version of it and Johnny Flynn was in it and he wrote a few songs for it.
Did you watch it?
I didn't. Eamon did, I think.
I haven't seen it, but I've seen the cover. I feel like I recognize the girl who plays her too.
Yeah, she was in a bunch of stuff back in the day. She might have been like Les Miserables or something. She's been in a bunch of pretty big stuff. Oh. Les Miserables.
Oh, right.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, great. The first book I have is Odyssey of Homer, which we've all read, right?
Of course.
Have you read it?
I have read
say
excerpts.
No or yes.
I've read excerpts of the Odyssey, and I know the basic outline of the Iliad and the Odyssey.
I've never read the Iliad.
I have listened to Love, War, and the Sea in Between.
Okay.
Which is basically, I mean, no, I wouldn't say it's overall, but there is a song called Ulysses.
I really like, even though this isn't a hardcover, I really enjoy how it
it's
kind
a paperback.
Of, I know, although it isn't a hardcover, which is what I prefer usually. Sorry. It's a nice, like, it opens.
Can we talk about that for a little bit? You prefer hardcover because, like, the paper gets all bent and stuff?
Yeah, I feel like it just preserves.
Correct. Okay, good.
And you can put it in a bag, like, it just, it's, but I kind of enjoy how this is landing in my lap, and you can like hold it like this.
There can be
like
good
this.
Oh, but then isn't it gonna get all curled when you close it?
But then it means it's been used.
Yeah, but then it's all curled and
yeah.
I don't know.
No, I get it, but like it also just lays open on your lap pretty nicely, or on a table.
Yeah, see, I like my Bible. It's like leather bound because it's like hardcover enough.
He reads a Bible. Just kidding.
Because it's like leather bound, so it has like a hardcoverness to it in a sense, but you can kind of do that same thing where you can kind of just like lay it open and it's
yes.
and it lays open nice on the table. You can hold it nice in your hand and it won't like flop all over itself.
So you prefer a leather?
No, not necessarily. I think I prefer a hardcover overall.
Okay.
But I think, I don't know. It depends on the thing. Because like, yeah, some of them I think you can get away with. I don't want to spoil anything, but I feel like you can get away with hardcover or a paperback with in certain styles. If it's like the sheen, the really, really glossy mm-hmm. sheen paperback, those always just bend like none other. Yeah. And then they have the crinkles
I don't
and wrinkles.
Like those
either. Not a fan.
But this is a good one.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's the content of it though?
I'm gonna start on book 12. I think starting on a chapter is gonna be a little bit easier for us.
Yeah.
So what is cool about these is like it's written like an epic poem mm-hmm. where it's not written as like a play, but more yeah, it has like page line
like
numbers
stanzas
and,
whatnot
not even like stanzas I don't think it's just I'm not really sure because
like
they
broken up by like increments of five or something
yeah
that's
okay.
like written in verse or whatever yeah.
Now when our ship had left the stream of the ocean river and come back to the wide crossing of the sea's waves and to the island of Asia oops the cord got in my way it's not Asia. Oh my gosh.
You know that little island.
I don't know how you spell it. It's A-I-A-I-A.
A-I-A-I-A?
A-I-A-I-A.
It's like the one part. I don't know why this is one of my favorite parts in the Lego movie. Where, what do they even say? There's some zinger line and it just zooms up on one of the robots and it goes, ay-ay-ay, in the background. I find it so funny.
It's so funny.
A-I-A-I-O.
Okay, this is so. Okay.
Thus far, I'm invested.
I feel like I need to start over.
And go for it.
Now when our ship had left the stream of the ocean river and come back to the wide crossing of the sea's waves into the island of A-I-A-I-A, where lies the house of the early dawn, her dancing spaces, and where Helios, the sun, makes his uprising. Okay, there's no period. I don't know
what it's
sentences
it's in verse,
are going.
I think.
Oh, okay. I feel like this is going
you can do this. You did start with one of the most ancient texts that our civilization
if
has.
If I read it in my head, it's fine, but I don't know how to say it out loud. Okay, can I just... I'm going to start over.
You got it.
Now when our ship...
I'm sorry, this just reminds me of this one episode of the end of Griffith Show where he starts reading and he gets to the same point and then someone knocks on the door and he like answers it and then comes back and he starts reading from the top and then gets to the same point and then someone rings the bell and then by the end Opie's like reciting it along with him anyway, so I feel like that.
Oh my gosh.
Now when our ship had left...
Can I just say into the island?
Sure.
Okay, great. Now when our ship had left the stream of the ocean river and come back to the wide crossing of the sea's waves and to the island.
A-I-A-I-A! Say it with us, folks.
Where lies the house of the early dawn, her dancing spaces, and where Helios, the sun, makes his uprising. Making this point, we ran our ship on the sand and beached her, and we ourselves stepped out onto the break of the sea beach. And there we fell asleep and waited for the divine dawn. But when the young dawn showed again with her rosy fingers, then I sent my companions away to the house of Circe to bring back the body of... Yep, okay, that's all.
A lot of Greek names now?
Yep. Do you skip them over in your head and just like you recognize it, but you, if you had to say it out loud, would you be able to pronounce it?
No, I probably try and actually figure out how to pronounce it. Especially, I guess it depends. If it comes up more than like two or three times, it depends. Sometimes, yeah, but most of the time I try and stop.
Even like Lord of the Rings, I used to just like memorize, like, how do you even say it? Aragorn? Yeah. That was not the name that he was in my head.
Aragorn, the guy.
But I just knew, who he was. But
some of the names are very similar. So what happens if you, like Baragond and Boromir are similar? How'd you not get the characters?
I just recognized that. Okay. I just didn't sound it out necessarily in my head. Hmm. I don't know. It's just interesting. All right. Cool. So would you read the book?
I mean, yeah. Great. I want to make a goal of reading it at some point in my life. So.
It's just quite the... I feel like reading something like this, because it's so extravagant of a journey.
Right.
It makes... I mean... In some ways, I think we can think in moments our own lives are similar.
Mm, yeah.
Even though, obviously, they're not, like, you're not going across seas and traveling over mountains and all this stuff.
But that's kind of like...
Or, I mean, interacting with the gods or something like that. Sure. It's weird, but...
But that's something that, like, I think, the like, ancient mythology exists because exactly that. Because it is like, oh, we want every moment to be this heroic achievement, right? I remember talking to my sister, and she was like, sometimes you feel like the hero just because you made the bus. You know, the bus didn't leave before you got there or whatever. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, you're
on time.
You're on time and you're doing good. And it's like, you are conquering things, even if it's something as simple as like your poor time management or whatever. Mm. So yeah, I'd read that.
It's cool.
It sounds just like you reading it. I was like listening and going, yeah, this is good. I don't know if I could sit down and read it. And I don't know if even like an audiobook would grab my ear.
Do you want me to read to you, Aiden?
It seems like one of those things. It was like, if we got a group together and we're like, let's read the Odyssey together, I'd be down.
That would be fun. We should do that.
We should do that.
I love book clubs because it really is, there's so many books out there, but it's hard to make yourself, at least for me. I think some people actually can sit and read pretty easily.
Yeah.
But for me, when I do it, I'm always happy I do. So I don't know why I don't, but. Mm-hmm. Okay, do you want to start your next one?
So the next one is Democracy in America by Alexis de Tocqueville.
Can I see?
I thought you were going to take a crack at it. Can I see? Cool. All right. Let's go to... These are long heckin' chapters. Mic. What the... Okay, good.
Speaking to your mic, little guy.
I got like halfway through and it said and like chapter one was still the header, but there's two volumes in here.
Oh.
So I was like, excuse me? Ooh, how religion in the United States avails itself of democratic tendencies. Chapter two of in volume... I don't know. See what this is all about.
Okay.
And it's a pretty short one. I'm not going to read the whole chapter. I have shown in a preceding chapter, well, I'm sure it was a good point. I guess I'm not sure. Maybe it was a good point. I have shown in a preceding chapter that men cannot do without dogmatic belief, and even that it is much to be desired that such belief should exist among them. I now add that of all the kinds of dogmatic belief, the most desirable appears to be dogmatic belief in matters of religion. And this is a clear inference, even from no higher consideration than the interests of this world.
I don't know what any of that meant.
We need religion of some sort. People will naturally
automatically
be drawn to religion, kind of no matter
what is religion, just routine religion, of like
a dogmatic devotion to a thing,
to a something,
and that can be the divine, that can be a cause, that can be
way of life, or yeah, something like
veganism,
yeah,
in some sense, you could say. Shout out to all my vegans.
Now that veganism in itself is that, but just like.
In and of itself, but the religion of veganism, I think, has problems. I think there are quandaries I have with it. Let's get like another couple sentences, because that was a pretty short paragraph. There is hardly any human action, however particular it may be, that does not organize in some very general idea men have conceived of the deity, of this relation to mankind, of the nature of their own souls, and of their duties to their fellow creatures. Nor can anything prevent these ideas from being the common spring from which all the rest emanates.
Ooh, I like that word, emanate.
Did you like the context that it was in?
I zoned out. I have that. I'm trying to listen. I'm a little bit more of one that needs to also be reading it to understand, to comprehend.
Oh, interesting. You're not much of a... This is interesting. Okay, I want to look into this book because I just want to know like about the author, because I'm not sure if she's coming from a...
I think it's a boy.
It says Alexis.
I know.
Boys aren't named Alexis, and you know this.
I think it's old. Maybe it's not. Maybe I'm totally wrong. Old?
Oh, translation by Henry Reeve. Where is this from? Revised by Francis Bowen. Abridged and with an introduction by Patrick Renshaw. It's getting kooky every day. What the heck is this?
Okay, let's keep this interesting for the folks.
Well, I'm just trying to figure this out. 1998. Michael Traylor?
He did. Okay.
All right. Well, that's kind of interesting. I don't know if I'd read this. It's Democracy in America is one of those things, like the title seems very self-explanatory. It doesn't like intrigue me and make me go, ooh, what's this all about? It seems like this could be one of those that's like Democracy in America is good, or it could be one of those that says Democracy in America is bad. If it's extensive and actually like goes through all the various things in the historical context, all those things, it's like, cool.
But, I think that's what it is. And what could be cool is also look at when that was kind of written.
Mm-hmm.
Because it sounds like it was translated, which makes it me think it was like maybe, very early, or maybe it was, no, it must not have been translated, but revised or something.
Mm.
But to hear from the early days, like what it looked like, and is it changed now? And are we learning the same things? Are we making the same mistakes? I don't know, things like that.
Let me just, if it's okay, just to do a little bit of research, because I'm sure it's in here somewhere. It looks like it says something on the back about being 150 years ahead of its time. So when you're talking about the translation, I was like, I mean, it could just be that it was, you know, written in 1943 in French or whatever, and then.
But it's in America, Democracy.
You're right. When the first volume appeared in 1835, it is French.
Oh, nice.
Wait, hang on. Into the French.
I guess his name kind of sounds French.
Yeah, because he moved to America. He was born French. But. Interesting. All right, that's cool. 1835. So that's like pre-Civil War. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm more intrigued now. Now that I know it's like this ancient thing. Not ancient. Sorry to all our listeners born in 1835.
Don't be insensitive.
We'll just keep shouting out every demographic that we may come across.
So this is another book I found from that Nashville.
McKay's.
You get it. Store. It's called Stories from the Arabian Nights. Mm. And I think this is where, like, you get, what's it called?
Aladdin and
whatnot.
So, I remember Sophia May Byer got super into, she had this big old collection of Arabian Nights stories, and she read a bunch.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really, I mostly got it because the cover is so cool. And, like, the pages are old and smell old and stuff. I love the smell of an old book. We'll just start from the top, shall we? The Fisherman and the Genie.
Oh.
Get ready. There was once an old fisherman who lived in great poverty with a wife and three children.
Ooh.
But through poorer than others, he ever toiled in humble submission to the decrees of Providence. And so, at the same hour each day, he would cast his net four times into the sea, and whenever it brought up to him, therewith he rested content. One day, having cast for the first time, he found his net so heavy that he could scarcely draw it in. Yet when at last he got it to shore, all that it contained was the carcass of a donkey. He cast a second time and found that the draught of the net even heavier than before, but again he was doomed to disappointment, for this time it contained nothing but a large earthenware jar full of mud and sand. His third attempt brought him only a heap of broken old bottles and pots. Fortune seemed to be against him. Dun dun dun. What's gonna happen? I feel like it's like they're like myths, which is cool.
Right.
I like it. I would read. Keep reading.
Okay.
What about you?
Sure. I'm not like crazy intrigued, but it's kind of interesting.
I like it. I think it was fun.
Yeah, that's fun.
Okay, it's cool.
So the next one, Peter Kraft book. Now, I've heard of Peter Kraft many times in many different contexts, but I've never actually read anything of his. And apparently you've read some of his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is Christianity for Modern Pagans, which is a commentary on Pascal's Pensée, as I say.
You know Pascal.
Pascal's Wager.
Do you know that? Well, yeah, but he has a book.
The Passé?
No. Well, I mean, yes, but I can't remember what it's called. Okay.
I think that's the only thing, because that was published after he died, and I don't think he published anything in his lifetime. Maybe he did, I'm not sure. All right. Oh, this index looks very fascinating to me. Passionate Truth Seeking? Heck yeah. Faith and Reason? All right, let's just pick a different... We're going to go to... Wow, these are what? This is laid out very interestingly. Okay, this is fascinating to me. All right, we're not gonna do that one. Ooh, Sin, Selfishness, and Self-Love. This looks intriguing. Is there anything worse than death? Yes. Sin. For sin is spiritual death. This is not just a metaphor. Sin kills the life of the soul. The essence of sin is self-love or selfishness. The forms of sin are what Christian theology calls original sin and actual sin. These two basic points must be made clear first so that we understand what Pascal is doing in trying to convince us of sin, of righteousness, and of judgment. John 16:8.
Some of these more intellectual books.
Big words.
Yeah.
Is that what you're going to say? Sorry. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, this is all the kind of stuff. It's like, it's intriguing stuff. I do wonder, I've heard some of Peter Crave. I don't know why talking today is rough these days. I've heard Peter Crave speak. Mm. And especially these days, like he's very old. He's like in his 70s or 80s or something like that. And the thing, there's a lot of things that he says. There's a lot of people, I hear a lot of people quote him. And I go like, oh, that's a really good, succinct way of saying it. He doesn't necessarily talk in that way. Oh. And I wonder, like, does he not write in that way? So, I don't know. Anyway, it's a very fascinating concept, Christianity from modern pagans, especially like a commentary on Pascal, who was kind of a modern pagan
based
for
on
a while.
What I've read, I feel like he, similarly to like maybe Plato and Aristotle, the way they really talk out and talk about all the options before they come to conclusion. It's very much a, you're going on this thought process, like journey. I feel like he writes similarly.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Well, he has another book, Socratic Logic, right? Which is all about Socrates.
And then he has like those little mini books I have that are written as like he's pretending to be Socrates. And it's like written like a play kind of. And it's like him arguing with the people of his time, like how he thought they would argue about certain things. And some of it is like how they would argue about things that we're dealing with today, which I think is interesting because it's obviously not Socrates, but it's like.
But using the same logic that we have.
And, so it I mean, it's like a whole scene of them talking through this conversation and then they come to like, maybe they come to a conclusion or whatever. I think it's interesting. I don't actually love that style. It's fine.
You don't?
I don't know. I do. It's interesting when I did have to read those types of books, I did enjoy that the most because it was like bringing in different characters and like writing it as a play. Sometimes it goes over my head because they're going down so many rabbit holes. I forget what we're actually talking about, if that makes sense. Do we do one more?
Sure.
Which one?
Do that one.
This one?
Mm-hmm.
This one is called, this is a fun story. It's called Far From the Dream, and it is the first book of a trilogy. And it's by this guy named Lance Wobbles. And I named my guinea pig when I was a kid Rupert Wobbles after this book.
Why? Where did Rupert come from?
I don't know. My head. He just looked like a Rupert.
Did you call him Mr. Wobbles at some point? Or was it always just... Okay.
Wubs. Well, Wubs.
Wubs.
Actually, I don't think I ever did.
What's up, Wubs?
But the guy, it was given to my mom and he wrote a note to her.
Aww.
He says, blessings to you. Hope you enjoy the story, Lance Wobbles. Hmm. And he wrote to Cheris, my mom. Aww. So, that's cool. Let's go to where the bookmark is, chapter 20.
So you have never finished this book?
Oh, I have.
Oh.
But there's just this randomly placed napkin in the book. I don't know. It's kind of about this, like, this, well, the first book is these two people get married, and then he goes off to war, and then she's, like, at home on the farm, and, like, kind of waiting for him to come back and all this stuff. And then the subsequent books, he's, like, back, and they're doing all their life. It's, like... Mm-hmm. Kind of like Little House on the Prairie kind of feeling, except not that time, but okay.
Sure.
This one's called Scotland, chapter 18. Well, here we go again, Jerry remarked, one of his gunnery mates, as the newly repaired Wasp pulled out of Norfolk. Yeah, seems like he was just doing this. Okay, that's how it's written.
Dialect, yeah.
The other man commented as he wheeled his scrub brush. Where you suppose we headin' this time? Jerry shrugged. Speculation was always buzzing around the ship about where they might be heading, but only a select few men ever knew for certain. Jerry had pretty well come to terms with the fact that he wasn't one of those men. But like most of the crew, he wasn't immune to the anxious wondering. The next harbor was a familiar one, though. The ship docked once more in Portland, where it anchored overnight. Then early in the morning of March 26, they left the sheltered waters of Casco Bay and emerged once more into the choppy North Atlantic. This time they were traveling in the company of 9 destroyers. The beautiful new battleship, USS Washington, and 2 heavy cruisers. Word gradually filtered down through the crew that they were part of Task Force 39, bound for the British Isles to reinforce the home fleet of the Royal Navy and help cover convoys routed to northern Russia. They battled high seas all the way, and their voyage across the Atlantic was soon marked by tragedy. Okay, that's about Jerry. That's the husband.
Jerry.
But we need to find a spot where it's about whatever her name is. Margie. Okay,
Margie?
Yes.
Margie.
This is called Chapter 17. It's called Ruthie.
It's called Chapter 17.
Yes. Margie gazed out the kitchen window while her busy hands made quick work of the morning breakfast dishes. It had taken only a couple days for her to settle into the quiet routine of life on the farm, and the next few weeks had quickly faded Gordon Stillwell, the Green Parrot Cafe, and her tiny boarding room into memory. She felt as natural and free in this house with Benjamin as she did in her mother's house. Benjamin is Jerry's father.
Okay.
Outside, the first winds of spring were warming the farmyard with the promise of winter's end. She saw Benjamin crossing from the barn to the hog shed with a bucket in hand. Although she had pressed him to change his mind, he had forbidden her to help with the barn work. He said that if she could keep the house clean and do the cooking, she could stay forever.
Wah, wah.
Oh, no. No, Benjamin.
Hey, gang. We went off on a little rant. It's the next day. This is Aiden and Liv.
Yeah, it's
from the
next
future.
Day.
From the past, from your perspective.
We went on a little bit of a rabbit trail.
That didn't really tie into the rest of the episode.
Yeah. It was a good conversation for between friends, but.
So we're going to share something now that's also not going to tie in well to the rest of the episode, but it's a different thing. Liv, you want to pitch
Aiden, you are a very efficient and disciplined guy.
Oh, thanks.
And also inspired and happy worker most of the time.
Yeah, I get grouchy.
I think that would be really fun to share some routines or mindset things or whatever that keep you excited to work. So if you don't know, Aiden and I work, regular jobs during the week, and then we come home and
it's
evening.
It's easy to assume just from seeing the externals, like they must be raking.
They
it
must
in.
Be.
they're just rolling in it. There's no way either one of these have day jobs.
No, but we do Opal stuff at the evenings and the weekends. So obviously, with anything, you get sleepy sometimes, or you feel, I'd rather sit down and do nothing. So,
okay. So, just ending on that note. So your question was, what are say that again for the folks
definitely
at home.
Not.
All right, fine.
So I guess my question is, what are some things that you do to stay inspired?
A big thing is having a really good bandmate.
Aww. That's nice.
But that does. We've talked about this on the podcast a lot about how different we are and how those differences bump up against each other and can cause tension and frustration and confusion and miscommunication. And I think over the past several months, we've been getting a lot better at that. I think this last summer, doing a bunch of shows in a row and dealing with the logistical sides of it, the creative sides of it, the actual performance, talking to people after the show, making sure like we're not getting off stage angry with each other and then going and pretending to be happy for people as they come up and say hi to us.
That sounds really dramatic. We're not usually super angry
No. It's just that like, it seemed like for a while the pattern was when we would be angry with each other, it would just be, all right, we're going to shut down. We're not going to talk to each other for the rest of the day, which is rough when you have a 1 p.m. show and then you have a 3-hour drive back home.
Yeah.
And I think we've just gotten a lot better at working through that and like actually discussing things and being patient with each other and trying to recognize that's a big thing for me mainly is I don't need to understand every last thing that's going on in your head and the entire process behind the decisions you make and the things that you say. Sometimes things just happen, and sometimes, it's weird because it's like, it's not the tone with you, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's not necessarily what I say, it's the tone in which I say it.
Sometimes.
With me, it's like the inverse.
Yeah.
It's like, you can say it to me however you want, but if the words themselves don't click in my brain, don't make sense with the standard, this isn't the question you asked, so I'll get off of it in a second. It's like you can say it in a grouchy manner, but if the words themselves make sense to me, I can still engage in a discussion with you.
Yeah. And it's I feel like our we do have some very similar goals with Opal and things like that, which are really lucky, honestly, to be in the same place. And maybe we've worked on that together, but I think also just Right. Hopefully, I'm hoping, like, our hearts do want this, yeah. the same things. But our communication style is quite different.
It is.
And that's how everyone is. Mm-hmm. I do think, like, in a workplace, mm-hmm. that's the same thing. Like, you're working those things out. We just have a kind of a unique situation that we're creative yeah. and we're business partners and we're friends.
And our workspace is so small and so concentrated yeah. and so intense that it's really easy for those things to come to the surface really yeah. quick.
I do think something that has helped us is designating certain things as your own.
Right. And so that's, like, that's new to the past.
Editing the months. Podcast, you know, mm-hmm. is your thing. I have some editing things for Instagram that I, mm-hmm. that's just my thing. And obviously we show each other and say, is right. this good? Is this good? We're always checking. Mm-hmm. But to have like something you're in charge of
yeah.
is like a, mm-hmm. a good confidence thing. And then also just, I think allows for you to like fully put your brain to something and not right. have the other person like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. And that's like where I'm big on collaboration. Everyone knows this, mm. but I'm also big on independence and your own, there's a lot of ways I could phrase it that could sound really wishy-washy and weird.
A process or?
No. Like you said, just confidence. Just knowing, like, I don't ever want people to feel dependent on anything I'm doing. Hmm. I don't want people's processes to depend on my process. Because I am a relatively disciplined person. But I even there, I'm just another guy doing his thing. And I have my own inconsistencies and problems and roadblocks and things. I think a big thing recently, and this is going to sound... I hesitate to say it just because it's like such a normal, like Christianese churchy thing to say, but I think I even hate saying this, but like my prayer life, we could say, which I think is prayer has become a more consistent, there's a lot of words I hesitate to say.
Purposeful.
Prayer? I was going to say regimented, but that makes it sound like it's this like,
it's we know, like, we know who you are.
Yeah. So anyway, just like over the past several months, that's become a lot more. I've just seen like what that actually does to just focus on more like why am I praying and what is this going towards? And a big thing, I've been praying the Liturgy of the Hours, which is like one of my favorite things, which is basically just different psalms for different points of the day. And then a couple other excerpts from other points in scripture and various prayers. And I really like it because it's dedicated to in the morning, first thing, you're praying these things, you're praying these psalms. And then in the evening, as the sun's going down, and that's sometimes like while we're meeting, while we're in the middle of meeting, right before, right after type thing, that's it's just kind of like built in moments throughout the day to like recenter yourself mm-hmm. and recognize like this is what God's calling me to do today and this is how he's calling me to act and how what the things he's pointing out and that's been a lot of it is just like he's going like you need to be really patient today because there's a lot of things going on and you need to recognize that without patience your life will be worse off. That was kind of a long answer.
I honestly noticed a difference also in you.
Aw, that's good.
In your attitude. Overall.
You think I'm a holier, more virtuous man now?
No, I just think you're right.
For sure, no.
I can sense the purposefulness in your way of living.
Mm, that's good.
And your intentionality with like people and conversations and stuff. Mm-hmm. More than you did before anyways.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool.
Yeah. What about you, Liv? What keeps you inspired?
Coffee. Joking, not joking. I think I love watching what other people are doing.
Mm.
Whether it be like music artists that I follow or like YouTube videos of them doing their thing or behind the scenes stuff or even like even watching TV shows and I only watch like The Office, never seen it, but I watch the bloopers sometimes. Because it's, like, these real people
mm-hmm.
that are, like, I mean, at their job. And right. they're, like, having fun and laughing mm-hmm. at themselves that they can't get through a scene mm-hmm. that they're getting, you know, every minute is, like,
right.
money. So, mm-hmm. I don't know. Just to see people that are, like, good at what they're doing, but then they're also being goofy.
Mm-hmm.
That type of thing. Because I think you can always feel like you're never doing... Like, I can kind of struggle with, like, never doing enough, but then you... Also struggling with feeling tired of, you right. know, things like that.
Right.
Everyone's different. So, yeah. Anyway.
Except for me.
Yeah, the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I would say just, like, it inspires me to see other people doing the thing that they love to do.
Mm, yeah.
Even going out into the town, and there's lots of people here that play music on the sidewalks and stuff.
Mm.
Like, I was in Franklin the other week, and there's a girl playing violin, just, like, playing her heart out. This other girl is in front of the store. There's, like, it's in kind of, like, around the corner of a busy area, and she has her full keyboard in front of this like tiny little boutique. Mm. And she's playing and has a speaker and it's like filling the whole courtyard area. Mm. And I was just, and she's just like, that's what she's doing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's very, so that inspires me because it's like, they love that they're doing and it's bringing me joy.
Right.
I want to do that also. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
I think a thing, this isn't necessarily like this inspires me to then go and write good music or whatever necessarily, mm-hmm. but it's just like having a really good conversation with someone just gives me a confidence and a hope in humanity. Yeah. I think that's a big thing of just like, there are good people out there and there are people who have really important things to contribute to this world. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. I'm able to witness some of that. And again, it's not like I totally get what you're saying. I have that a lot too. Watching a good movie, watching, going to a concert where it's just like, I just want to do that. That looks so cool. I want to participate in that. Mm-hmm. But then also just like a couple weeks ago, I had lunch with a friend and I was just like on that high, like all weekend mm-hmm. of just like, that was a really good conversation.
Yeah.
And it was poignant and it was, you know, it was like asking the tough questions and hearing things out and then just spending times reveling and just like mm-hmm. the good things in life and just recognizing like how lucky and blessed we are as humans.
Amazing
combo. And that's like, I'm lucky to have so many friends and know so many people because that's like my favorite thing. And that's, I'm so lucky to have so many people who do that with me. Mm-hmm.
I think we've spent a while like being kind of like writers in a Hobbit type setting.
What do you mean by that?
Hobbit? I don't know what I mean.
You mean to say hermit?
Yeah. Hermit. I was like, wait.
But Hobbit also kind of makes sense.
Like kind of homebodies, right? I mean, like we'd probably more naturally.
For sure.
Stay in our place for and sure. like write songs mm-hmm. and that. But sometimes that you can only pull so much. I feel like
sure.
this past year, we've also both individually, I think on our separate like
right.
lives, gone out and did stuff
mm-hmm.
and like lived in. Had experiences and
right.
you know, saw well, things, saw sorry. Places, you know, things like that. Yeah. So I think that actually brought a lot
right.
Of inspiration to me as well.
I think for a while when we first started as a band, we had already done a lot of stuff together mm. where we still were living our separate lives and I had my activities that I did over there and you had your activities you did over there. But even before we moved down to Nashville, we just spent more and more time working on things together.
Yeah.
And kind of our lives kept getting blended more and more into one type thing.
Yeah.
And then especially once we moved to Nashville, it was really like everything we did together just about.
Because we didn't know anybody
right.
else.
Right. And we were scared, time, you know, and we're teenagers who didn't know what was going
we
on.
We moved really far away. Good times.
Right. Good times and scary, depressing times.
Yeah.
Those are the other things. I was talking, I won't tell the whole story. Never mind. But yeah, over the past year or so, I think it's been nice to feel like kind of, I don't know.
Like we have a good base here and now we can go out and kind
right,
of like
right.
explore as individuals.
And I think because we were still figuring out, the band once we moved down here,
sure.
you know,
yeah.
there was a lot of unknown there. There was a lot of general unknown just in moving across the country and just mm-hmm. being in a new city. Even if it wasn't across the country, even if it was just in a new city, you know, that were a few hours yeah. away from home, that yeah. would have been an adjustment and that would have had its
We're
its
feeling
things.
More and more settled, I guess.
Right. And so I think then, yeah, feeling more confident, I can trust to live with all these things and I can trust myself with all these things mm-hmm. and I don't have to feel, because I think there was just this like, we need to be working on Opal stuff the entire time, no matter what.
Yeah.
And that just got, we would run over the same things over and over, the same type of discussion points. I'm like, well, we need to do this and this and never actually figure out how to actually implement it and take action.
We were saying that and then we were also not planning in the future.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Where, do you have more thought? Sorry.
I mean, yeah, but you go first.
Something else that helps me to stay on task and whatever is to do those planning. So like, we recently did like our 3-month plan, Opal mm-hmm. plan, which is quite detailed, I would mm-hmm. say. I guess it 3 month isn't as detailed, and then like a month ahead is very detailed as far as like what day is
sure.
doing what.
Yeah.
And then we also did a 6 month. Mm-hmm. So that to me keeps me inspired. If I don't know what I'm working towards
right.
or a product essentially
right.
that is being put out, whether, you know, that sounds like very
yeah.
whatever, but you know what
and
I'm saying?
I'm,
You're not, maybe not
I'm,
that way.
Well, that helps me and that keeps me excited and that keeps me. Yes, but I'm not good at motivating myself to actually do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think...
I love doing that.
Doing that. Because we did a lot of that around this time last year, beginning of this year, mm-hmm. and we basically had like 6-8 months planned out, and then we're getting to the end of that, and then kind of a month went by, and it was kind of nice in a way to kind of have like, yeah, kind mm-hmm. of like end of August, September, wasn't really anything super specific. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like a mini vacation, but not really exactly because it wasn't a purposeful thing.
It makes me unsettled, to be honest, because I'm like, what is Opal doing? And then just question.
So
like,
it's
all
like if we had in January said, and then we're taking the month of August off and we're just doing our own thing and we'll keep doing the podcast and we'll try and do these couple things here and there.
Yeah.
Then it would have been like, great. And you'd be happy with that. But yeah. And so I think that is a kind of a continual. I can look at the calendar and go like, oh, that's right. In 3 weeks, we're going to do that thing. And I'm really excited for that.
It was also, it brings me to another thing, taking breaks, mm-hmm. especially when you've like come off. So we kind of took that unintentional kind of break mm-hmm. in a sense. I mean, obviously we were still meeting, but it wasn't the same intensity as like
we didn't have the same
touring or
goals.
Recording an album or something like that. Because we had just come off the tour and we were feeling good, mm-hmm. taking a break then was actually probably a really smart idea because now as we're kind of getting back into October, I'm like really excited to do mm-hmm. a bunch of work.
Mm-hmm.
So I've heard that from other people
work,
too. It's
and because like, I think you, sorry, finish your thought.
No, just taking a break when you're at your high, and then you're going to kind of be antsy to get back to it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and you've talked a bit about this, about how like performing is kind of the fulfillment of all the work you've been doing on the music.
Yeah. Just seeing the reactions in real time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, I agree with that, but I think I'm also, I also see it as like a preview work. So I see like the album is the final product that I'm working towards and the show is more of the final product you're working towards. But if it's a show and there's no way that they can listen to the music that we're playing, it feels as kind of incomplete, which to me I view as like we're practicing, we're trying things out, we're changing up the arrangement one show to the next to try and see what people respond to best so that we can know how to record it.
I don't see it necessarily. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the final. It's just one thing that I do look forward to, especially when we're trying stuff out because it's like... Mm-hmm.
But I think there is a different thing where you're like, we are confident with this. It's on an album. It's out there in the mm-hmm. world. You can go listen to it. And now here we are live performing it for you.
Yeah.
And there's like this resoluteness of, I think it's a concrete, we're proud of what the song is and we want to share this with you. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's something that now we're just kind of, again, we're getting kind of back into of like, what's the next draft. And I think that's something with some of the stuff we've been writing is like, this is going to be really different. And I'm really excited because
it's fresh.
It's new. It's pushing ourselves in a lot of different directions. And I think I'm excited to try that out. And I think for Third Ave, I was very conscious of like kind of playing it close to the chest of, I know I can basically do some cool harmonies. I know I can basically record a decent acoustic guitar part.
Yeah, we were trying it out.
Right. And Companions of Passing, we're pushing ourselves a bit more. And a lot of that was knowing Nigel was there to like give mm-hmm. me a ton of pointers whenever I needed them.
Mm-hmm.
And this one even more, I'm like, let's just do whatever. And if it sounds horrible, we'll figure out how to make it sound great.
And we're not thinking album-wise either.
No.
We're singing song by song, which I think is going to be so fun.
This will be really interesting.
It's kind of cool to see like we hit a full like circle. We've recorded, we've written an album. Record it, and now it's like, okay, I guess we do that again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess we wrote an album, we recorded it, and we toured.
Mm-hmm.
That's like what bands do all the time. And then the next year or whatever, or 2 years, then they do the same thing again.
Uh-huh.
And then again, so we've hit that, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations.
Look at us, Liv.
Like, I don't think of Third Ave as like official just because it's short and
we did one show
and it was
right
like,
after.
You know, a very short recording process,
right?
Kind of,
relatively speaking,
I guess.
Yeah.
Actually, I did feel like we worked on that for a bit.
We did, but that was also because it was full of so many,
our rehearsals weren't as long back then either.
That's true. Like we also weren't as efficient. I think if we took those 6 songs and we're like, let's record them right now, we could get it.
Yeah.
We could get it done in like 3-4 months.
Yeah. We were also getting to know each other in a as a band. I mean, it
and
was very
also,
formative. I don't regret any of it.
Right.
It's just,
And that's where the whole, that was really where like, our relationship as two friends became a thing because we were when it was like the two of us are even writing songs together. It's even past the two of us are practicing some jazz stuff. The two of us are now writing stuff together. It still was like, this is, we've barely spent any time just the two of us hanging out.
Yeah. And we've been in, obviously,
we've been in a lot like of things groups at that
and
point.
Stuff.
We, yeah.
And we've creatively worked together.
Right.
So we didn't know, you know, it's not like we just jump in, like we did skits and improv and stuff. Right. So we like laughed at each other and knew how to do that. But it is right. a very different thing when you're writing a song mm-hmm. and someone is just sitting across from you and they're waiting for you to say a lyric. Right. It's like, it's a little scary. Like, I remember being scared about it.
Really?
Yeah, nervous.
Was I intimidating?
Maybe.
Because of my expertise and my amazing musicianship?
I think just the whole idea in itself, like writing songs and stuff, was intimidating at that time. But
now you don't care.
No, we just say the dumbest lyrics and you then you're do. Like, no.
Almost exclusively. No, I kid. No. Last night we were sitting around the table trying to write something. And I had a very specific vision for what it was. Not like a vision of like this is what the song is about, but just like a vibe.
We were going for Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah. I was just all of a sudden like, I don't even know Simon and Garfunkel that well. Just all of a sudden like, well, we both I want to like write an idea a Simon and Garfunkel song. And Liv was like, sure. And anyway, that's that. And I'm excited to just, and similar with like another song we have where it was like, this is the vibe and it's very different, but let's go for it.
The trick is to play what you're excited about also.
Yeah, that is.
Just like do the stuff that, I mean, obviously there's always things where you're like, I don't want to do this part of the process mm-hmm. or something. I mean, kind of, although it doesn't have to be that mindset.
Right. Yeah, I think like, it's like,
yeah.
And sorry. I think that's thing something to social media for me, basically the entire time we've been a band has been, whatever. Basically, which means post whatever, whenever, and also it's the bane of all things and it's a strangle to creativity. And those are kind of the two extremes in my head of what social media is. Recently, and that's been a bit part of like what our goals are coming
and
up.
And kind of a big frustration also, it's I been would say.
For the two of us, for some reason, whenever Liv brings it up, I'm like, I have to just lay out my entire deep existential philosophical reasoning for like, why something in me objectively reacts to the whole of the concept of social media.
And I'm just like, yeah, I just want to post a picture of us playing on stage.
And I'm like, I'm down with that. Just don't run it past me. Just do it. And we'll figure it out. But I think a big thing is just like, we'll just say it. We've set like, kind of what Liv was saying earlier about like responsibilities. It's like, this is Aiden's responsibility for social media. And this is Liv's responsibility for social media. Mm-hmm. And that to me has been like, great, I can do that. That's fun and that's easy and that's chill. Mm-hmm. And we're also then able, because it's like, I'm getting too specific and too vague at the same time. Anyway, I thought
of one more thing. Sorry, back to the topic of.
Oh yeah, the original question.
What keeps you disciplined and stuff, or inspired? I guess inspired to be that, or whatever
think,
the words
I think
are.
Both.
But
I think sorry, you give your thought first.
The thought is because the day to day can look similar in our lives of it. I mean, obviously we're working on different things, different days, but it's kind of, you know, you play a little music, you do a little computer work type thing.
Right.
Learning something like being purposeful about learning. So like I didn't really edit at all. Yeah. And now I've been editing the reels for this podcast and obviously it's not very hard. Like anyone can really do it.
Sure.
But I still had to learn some things in the software, right?
And you've seen like the first reel versus the last reel of like, oh, you've learned new techniques,
timing,
and new methods, how to figure out the timing,
how to be more quicker than it. So that's something I look forward to in the week, and having those little pockets of things, because there are times where it's just going to be a monotonous like time of season or whatever.
I got a yo-yo so that I could do something. I could fidget while editing the podcast.
Oh, there's a good little tip. Get a yo-yo.
But it's tough because I'm right-handed, and the right hand is what I need for the mouse.
You have to left-hand yo-yo?
But I could try, I guess. And the mouse is most of what I use when I'm editing. Because a lot of editing the podcast is just listening to it and making sure, like, oh, that's an extra long pause, and it's just cutting out a little thing. Like, it's not, like, drastic things. Anyway. That's a fun little thing.
I also think we do schedule our days pretty, like, you know, hourly, I guess. But if you're like excited to do one thing and you're on a roll, or you're working on something and you're just on a roll, keep it. Keep going.
Yeah.
You'll find other places to fill in
the
other things that you need to do. I think, depending on the type of person, I guess, but I think you can visualize kind of how to fit things in. I don't know. Anyways.
Cool.
Because at the end of the day, you want to like what you're doing and have
fun. For sure, yeah. You know what they say.
What?
if you find something, if you, what is it? If you get a job doing what you love, you'll never work a day in your life, or something to that effect. Mm-hmm. When your vocation becomes your vacation. All right, Liv, this was a better rabbit trail than the one we went on yesterday. So, and I think it's more lighthearted and fun.
Yeah.
Any last words, Liv? I already asked you this.
No.
All right.
Scary way to say it.
Any last for this episode before we say goodbye to the folks?
I don't think so.
All right, folks. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. We will see you next week for a brand new episode of
Between Takes.